life on the road. It's
booze, tacos, angry dwarves, strippers waving guns,
and
bees, fights, candle flights, running with the runs,
and
blacklists, bounce checks, great a bachelorette, drunks in the front, making out through your set,
and
middle acts doing blow more, missing merch,
and
drive the rental car past another mega church,
and
juice, keys, vagina, fist, your cell phone is gone, one big Law and Order marathon.
There you go. Noon on the nose. You guys, this is this is the most punctual podcast I've done, and I've been doing this for over a decade.
It's because we're good.
I'll run the
light, though. You say it's an hour and 20 minutes later. You're like, shut up, Ron.
Hey, thanks for tuning to the Road Stories podcast. Everybody, I'm your host, Murray Valeriano, part of the All Things Comedy Network. Hey, sorry I didn't make the All Things Comedy Festival this year, I'm sure, when does this go up? Has it happened already by the time this goes up? So I'm sure you guys had a great time. Sorry I didn't make it, but I had a great Ice House gig. Thank you for coming out. Hasn't happened yet. Sorry. So I'm trying to get my time frame. All right. So what's today, Bron? Today's
the 19th.
To get the date 19th. All right. I don't know when this goes up, but we'll figure it out.
Your Ice House gig is tomorrow. I saw that.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, right. So this, all right. So this will go up soon. So, hey, thanks for coming out to the Ice House last night. I think it's sold out. So that was nice of you guys to come out and support. And the following week, I'll be at the Ice House again. Those are sold out. Joining me today on the podcast, I'm very excited. This is an interesting take. I love both of these people in different ways. I've known Bronston Jones for how long?
I think we met back in the NBC days. I think it's probably been 13, 14 years, something like that.
And I've never called you Bronston in my life.
I know. It's like, if you say Bron, people hear Ron or Brian. But if you say Bronston, it shakes their ear up, so they hear it. But you can go back to Bron.
Okay, I just got to get it out of the way.
Yeah, or you can say Bronny.
Bronny?
Yeah, that's what my mom calls me.
Well, let's leave that to your mom. And then I love this woman who I've known. I don't even know when to even start to think about when I met you at the Improv. Many years ago.
2006, 2007-ish?
Probably 2008 when I came back to stand up.
Oh, that would make sense.
Yeah, that's it. And this is Dee Burdett. Yeah, sorry. Am I saying that right?
Yep.
Perfect. How are you?
I'm fabulous.
Nice to see you. I ran into you at the Improv on Melrose the other night.
I know, oddly enough.
which she doesn't work there anymore. I've known her through the Improv, through John Lovitz, and then now The Rec Room.
Now The Rec Room.
Is there anything in between Lovitz and The Rec Room that you worked at?
Oh, there's a bunch of stuff.
Oh, wait, you're at a music venue for a while, right?
Yeah, I did. Well, I did the show at Harvell's for a little while in Long Beach.
Okay.
The pop-ups down at the Pioneer Town.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, pop-ups at Pioneer Town?
I did campfire comedy at Pioneer Town Motel.
What?
Yeah.
Really? What is that?
He can probably describe it best from a comics perspective.
All right. Pioneer Town is up above, like in the mountains above 29 Palms.
Okay.
So, you know, you're not in 29 Palms. You're kind of over the next mountain. And I think just from looking at it, it looks like it was an old Hollywood studio set for Westerns.
Uh-huh.
Like there's this Western town that has nothing inside the buildings. And then there's one giant bar for no reason. It's in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
This place will fill up with literally hundreds of people on weekend nights. And then next to that is this little tiny 8-10 bedroom motel that's called Pioneer Town that they've made super, super hipster, trendy, cool. But
sure.
It's nice. And I guess like the rooms all have people's names on them, right?
So Pioneer Town was founded in 1936.
Why did you waste their time with me?
Seriously.
I thought you were going to describe campfire comedy.
I never did it. You never booked me on that. So
they might have been done by the time you came up. They were just
gonna get ugly.
It was 5 weeks.
Yeah, they were done.
Sorry.
Founded by Roy Rogers and Gene Autry to be a permanent 1880s film set.
Okay.
Over 200 projects were filmed there.
Right.
So. It is. It's maintains that 1880s aesthetic.
Uh-huh.
Happy and Harriet's is the venue that's in Pioneer Town.
That's the place McCartney played, wasn't it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is a pretty well known like music venue.
Right.
But it's an incredible restaurant, a bomb ass honky tonk bar.
Yeah, awesome.
But they have like every kind of music there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. FYF does miniseries there.
Okay.
In between the Coachellas, they mm-hmm. do sponsored shows there.
Yeah.
So there's been some pretty big names that have rolled out there.
That's plus, when, plus that bouncer that you hit on every time we were there.
Stop it. I love Big Dave.
Apparently it's Big Dave.
Yeah.
Big Dave has, he can do Black Dog.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you close your eyes.
Singing or playing?
Singing and playing bass.
Oh, okay. Well, geez. All right. Well,
he's like a double threat.
Like Big Dave's got some talent.
Extinct Paul McCartney.
I almost drove out to that Paul. I tried to get into that Paul McCartney show because I guess
so
I don't
did
know
everybody. Else
I know
in
that's
LA.
The other thing I was thinking, but I don't know if this is still true. Maybe you know this since you're in the managerial / promoting side of things. When bands play at the Coachella Festival, they can't play in Los Angeles for like 6 months before and 6 months after. Does that ring a bell to anybody?
I mean, I would imagine there are some sort of radius clause
mm-hmm.
involved in that because it's
radius
such a
clause.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like it. That's a good term.
That's an official term.
I know. That's why I got you here.
Well, yeah. So now I would imagine.
What?
We have that in stand up. Like you play one club and the other one for another 6-7 months.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think that that's difficult to do in LA. I'm sure, like, if you have a show in Irvine, you can't book another show that you promote.
Right.
But if you do unannounced spots, I don't think that's a big deal.
Yeah, that's not a big deal. And it's really only, it's just the headliner. I'm sure support acts can, you know, jump around left and right all they want, you know, without any problem.
Book spots all willy-nilly.
Yeah. I don't know. We saw this MC at the last week. I don't know if it's going to be the same.
The other thing about Pioneer Town that I have to talk about is that it has the least light pollution of,
oh, yeah,
of one of the 10.
There's zero light pollution. So you can literally see every star.
Oh,
like you
beautiful.
Can see the Milky Way on the regular.
Right.
If it's a clear night. I love that it snows in the winter. It's like mm-hmm. at 4,600 feet, I think.
Wow.
So yeah, it snows in the winter. It's cooler in the summer. So people that love Palm Springs, but they're like, it's too hot, can go up to Pioneer Town and have.
Yeah.
Is it, where was the venue? Was it in Pappy and Harriet's?
Oh, no. Oh. I dressed up our barn.
Your barn?
Campfire comedy.
Okay. All right. Well, you don't want to put a campfire in a barn. That sounds like fire hazard.
Well, it was an open barn.
Okay.
Really cool spot. I mean, they've since, that was when I had first got there. And I had got there to kind of help them get everything off the ground. And I only left because, like, my work there was done.
Right.
They were going to redo the rest of the rooms, mine being one of them. Mm. I lived on site for, I think, 19 months.
I was going to say, that was kind of a haul for you if you lived in Long
it
Beach.
Really was. Well, no, I lived on site at the hotel. And then so the nights that it was off, that's how I established Campfire Comedy during the summer. After September, it was too difficult to even imagine having an outdoor show.
Right, because it's so cold.
Wind,
yeah, sure.
The occasional monsoon. Right. You know, like, yeah. So.
Well, that's what they do in Palm Springs. They don't. The improv only has Fantasy Springs for like 2 months.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
The summer gets it doesn't get so hot. It just gets so active with all that they don't want to compete. Is that right? Does that sound right?
I feel like summertime is the off season in Palm Springs because it gets 120 degrees.
Maybe that's
there.
It. All right. Maybe they don't want to deal with the hotness, and then before is, I don't know. It's only 2 months.
Yeah, they only have like a couple of months that they can do anything.
Yeah.
There really.
I like that. That's a good venue. That Palm Springs venue. I like it. I usually sneak down and see the band.
I'm a fan of Joshua Tree, too.
I went to Joshua Tree many years ago once.
I've been going for many years.
I like Joshua Tree.
Joshua Tree stand-up show. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's right up Bronze Alley.
I want to say like Dan Madonia or somebody like that did an album where a bunch of people just kind of hung out around a campfire and he
It was Dan Madonia, and he did it at the National Park, which is crazy.
So basically risking getting busted.
At the Joshua Tree National Park, he did it.
It's like, good for you, Dan. I fully support that mission.
Did he call his album Joshua Tree? Not you two?
Yeah. The not Joshua Tree? The other Joshua Tree?
Joshua Tree you can't rock out to. Joshua Tree.
They were rocking out.
Oh, I will tell you, if you go to Pioneer Town because of the light pollution thing, and if you eat edibles, looking at the stars, because I was walking from her room, like she would give me like an empty room during the weeknights when it was empty. And so I was eating these edibles, and then I realized that they hit way too hard. And I was like, I can't even be around D. I just can't be around people right now. And I walked around building to get there, and I just looked up, and all of a sudden, like, not only could I see all the stars, I was in the middle of them, flying around through them, and I was fascinated. But then the edibles really kicked, and the paranoia hit, and I'm like, there's going to be a coyote that eats me. I can't be outside right now.
Sure that edible wasn't a mushroom? What you ate?
It felt like it. It was super powerful.
I told him to eat, like, a little piece first, and he ate the whole cookie.
Well, he's a big guy.
I like sugar. It's good. You never learn your lesson. You never do. On edibles.
Excuse me.
Are you dying over there?
I'm dying. I have to apologize that I'm coughing. As a matter of fact, I'm going to pause this and go get something to drink.
Very practical conversation.
All right. So I go to get water. I come back and these guys are dying. What is what?
Oh, no.
You had to get the history of Pioneer Town. We couldn't get this in.
So, because when you went out to get your water, you were like, oh, it's going to get hot in here. And he's like, I've already got boob sweat. And I'm like, why are you wearing a sweater? It's Southern California. It's the middle of the day. So when she's been out there driving all night. And I'm like, well, put a change of clothes in your car. Like, I always have extra clothes in my car. I always have a pair of swim trunks in there. I have a towel in case I end up on the beach. And I always have extra underwear because for some reason I'm so paranoid I'm going to shit myself.
Well, how do you outdo boob sweat? You shit yourself. If you'd like a t-shirt, if you get too hot, my closet is right there. I don't want
to. Oh, no.
I do, too. I always have a ton of clothes in my car because I will drive to Irvine or San Diego, and you just get back sweat in the sun, and you just got to change into something.
Yeah.
And I lose coat hangers in the green room.
Coat hangers in the green room sounds like a horrible album idea. It's just all abortion jokes.
Horrible.
Well, we'll go back to
unless
that.
They're well crafted.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. I like these attitude.
The babies.
Well,
okay.
I apologize. I had a little coughing. I have a cold. I didn't tell the listeners. I'm just getting over the cold. So
I was going to ask you, but I only wanted to ask you if I'm on a microphone. Can I see the scar?
Yeah, you can see a scar. Not right now.
Ah, but I want to be mic'd up when we
do it. Let me prep the story.
Do they not know?
No, please. They're turning it off right now. Fast forwarding. But no, this has nothing to do. Well, kind of do the surgery. I ran into a comic who was on my show in January or February or March. Somewhere in the, it must have been like March, April, when I had my surgery. May. It must have been March. And his name's Rydoon. All right, that's his Instagram. He's like huge on Instagram. I actually forget his actual name. We're not friends. We're not close friends.
We're not friends.
You know, I don't mean to like, I remember the guy.
The rule is no shit talking comics. This guy's got too many Instagram
followers. He's a hack. No, he's a good guy. He was brought in by another guy, so I met him that day. So we're not super tight. So I went to the improv the other night, and I poked my head in the lab, the side room, and it was him. And he's like, hey, Murray, right? Because he doesn't know me either. All right.
Okay.
Like,
you're not his friend either.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah. And I'm like, hey, what's up? And he's like, hey, you know, Rydoon or whatever name. I did your podcast in earlier this year. I'm like, oh, right, man. Yeah, I'm sorry. I one a week, 52 a year. You know, I apologize.
He's like, you're not that memorable, Rydoon.
You weren't that good. Let's be honest. And he's like, oh, yeah. Remember that? That was the day where you had that horrible coughing fit and you almost couldn't breathe. I'm like, yeah. It's like, oh, that was crazy. I go, you think that's crazy? And I lifted my shirt and I said, this is what the coughing fit was about. And he's like, what? Fuck. And so I showed him a scar. All right, you can see my scar.
It was a total tease. I was like, I thought you were getting to this part of the story so I could see it.
Now, this is where I have to preface this by I've just started working out again, so I might be a little flabby before I show you my scar.
You weigh like 12 pounds. He's got a six-pack and he's flabby. Dude, that's awesome.
Not bad, right?
What are the two bottom ones?
Those are tubes.
Drain tubes.
Yeah, where my heart, where they're draining fluid out of my heart.
Oh, man. How long does that take?
To drain the fluid out of the heart?
No, the surgery.
I think I was in surgery for 8 hours. 6-7 hours. They stopped my heart for 4 or 5.
5 hours your heart was stopped?
Uh-huh.
Dude.
When I asked Bron to do this, he's like, I'll only do this if I can see your scar.
Because you posted online, if I asked you if you wanted to see it, people are like, no. I'm like, fuck yes.
Yes, it's a very divisive question. Do you want to see my scar? And I will ask anybody that.
That's from March? That's healing up fast.
May 14th.
that's healing really well, man.
Yeah.
Not
yeah,
that I'm a doctor. I have any
thank you.
Any
thank
expertise.
God. Hey, Bron. Honey, Bron says I'm doing well.
My dad was a doctor, but he did autopsies, so I don't really even think that his surgery could help you.
I don't even think that's a doctor if you do autopsies,
yeah,
is it?
Pathologist, yeah.
Oh, okay.
You're trying to figure out why people died.
Oh, so, I see what he's doing.
Yeah.
Just practicing.
Pathodes. That's what pathologist
is. Oh, that makes sense.
Bacteria. But whatever. He's a piece of shit.
It.
Let's not talk about that.
Keep going. Really? Mm-hmm. You don't like your dad?
No,
wonder you're a comedian.
Exactly. No, you got to have some. I was saying this, and I've said it on too many podcasts, so I'll do it real quick. I don't understand people who have had a stable life growing up with middle-class parents where education was a big thing. Like, why would they get into this business where all we're doing is trying to get desperate attention from other people?
Yeah, no,
doesn't
I
make
agree.
Any sense.
I agree.
How normal is your experience with comedians, D?
I love my experience with comedians. I could never have a regular job. I tried.
I was thinking about that too. I could never have a regular job now after doing this for so long, because I was, you know, I was in recovery. I started thinking, maybe I'll change things up. And like, what am I going to do? I don't do anything else. I can't go to become an accountant now, right?
I mean, even if I didn't go like way opposite 9-to-5 desk job in a cubicle, I don't think I could work where my primary thing was just around everyday people.
Yeah. There's something different about working in clubs. It's different every night, right?
I mean, it's different every night, but also it's just the relationships and interactions with everybody in general.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as...
I think a lot of the regular rules of society don't apply to us, because obviously we are standing on stage saying things that you're not allowed to say at work. I mean, that we're literally getting paid to tell people, hey, nice boobs or whatever, you know, like to hit on customers. And I mean, they all know it's a joke, but if you're a barista trying to make that joke, you're not working at Starbucks anymore.
Oh, that's a good point.
And, but it's also the way we interact with each other is also highly inappropriate for a corporate lifestyle. I mean, just, you know, like men and women and everybody's, they're all sort of okay with it. Cause I don't think you could work there if you weren't. I think you'd just quit immediately. You're like, I don't understand like why people are just saying shit to each other.
But I think that's also why, just over the years, as much as I loved my experiences at the Improv, they're a little on the corporate side for the employees now.
Because
it's a bigger deal. You know, that's a they've grown.
Yeah, they've got a parent company in there.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Which I love, and I'm glad for their growth, and I'm glad that those stages are there for the comics.
Yeah.
Even if I'm not a huge fan of a club, I'm always grateful for it, because comics will have a place to perform.
Right. Well,
you
that's
know,
great.
That's kind of the outlook that I take. I never tell somebody, don't go to that club.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh, interesting.
Club specifically?
To any club.
In general.
In general. I never tell somebody, don't go to that club. It's terrible.
Right.
Well, that's good. That's a good support from the management. Well, there's some clubs where you talk to the manager at the club and you think you fucking ruined their night by asking for a drink ticket. Oh,
I have never gotten that. If you don't have the drink ticket on you, walk them over to the bar and say, get him a drink.
Right.
Well,
do you know what I mean? I just...
Unless it's an uptight club. I mean, if you work the club a lot, the bartenders don't even really care, you know?
I mean, even still, I just think that your doors are open not to push chicken wings. They're there because you've got comics on stage. They're why the doors are open.
Mm-hmm. Well, the
Treat
doors
them
are...
like it.
Because a lot of comics have that thing where they think that we're like, it's an art museum or it's like a public library where anything should go. And you're like, no, it's a bar that's there to sell drinks. And we are the reason people are coming to sell the drinks. So you can't interfere with them. They can have a style. They can have, you know, like Laugh Factory's cleaner than, say, the Comedy Store or whatever. They have a different style. So people need to respect that with the different clubs. But I think that the management and the owners need to treat their employees, whether it's us as comedians or staff, really well. Like, I know when I go on the road and it's a whole new staff than it was there like a year ago,
right?
I'm like, this is gonna be a brutal weekend because everybody quit. But when you go in year after year and it's the same people over and over, you realize that the owners treat everybody like family, which means they're not gonna be annoyed when I'm like, hey, where is this, or what, you know, kind of get this.
That's a good point. That's an interesting observation.
Oh, that's very true. I think that's true of like any venue.
Yeah.
Be a comedy club or otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Even restaurants and just you know, bars that I hang out at.
But if a comedy club's not got comics there, then they're at Chili's. Or yeah. TGI
or a karaoke you know, bar.
Basically, you're calling the comics beer nuts.
No, I'm just saying, you know, that's what sets you apart and makes you like an amazing venue.
Yeah, absolutely.
An attraction as opposed to...
But at the end of the day, they can't keep their doors open if they're not selling the drinks.
Oh, absolutely. And I always tell people that because sometimes guests will gripe. They're like, I just paid $15 for a ticket. You're paying for that comic. It's probably worked for 15 years for free.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you know,
wait, that money's supposed to come to us. Can we please tell the clubs that?
That's how we roll at the record. You know, like that.
Yeah, no.
Well, let's flip that and let me tell you, and we're going to call this a road story because it happened in West Hollywood and it took me an hour to get there. So. This was this week. Let's flip that and say, yeah, the management and the owners have to be cool, but so do the fucking comics.
Yeah.
All right. So I get asked to do this gig, and I don't want to say his name because he's a really nice guy, and he's been on this show, and he booked a show the other night, and it was me, and like Kira was on it, and an old friend of mine named Peter Sprite, who I haven't seen in 10 years, and a couple great comics, and this guy, who's also a great comic.
So by going through those lineups, we can figure out who it was.
Probably. Nah, I got to bleep this shit out.
You're just bleeping everybody's names, like, how many assholes were on this show?
And so it's a 9:30 show in West Hollywood, and I hate the late show if I don't have an early show. I hate rallying at like 9 p.m., you know? I'm so old, I'm ready for bed.
Oh, man, I hate 7 o'clock shows.
Sorry. By the way, I'm completely paranoid now that every time I cough, like I'm going to die. Like it turned me into this giant hypochondriac, this whole surgery thing.
I would say a cough that led you into an 8-hour open heart surgery. It's okay to be slightly worried. I think the PTSD from that's pretty good.
That's the other thing is when I got out of surgery, my listener sent me a ton of books and stuff to read. And I was really excited. And I spent like, you know, a week on my back. I could finally sit up and read. And I cracked open the book and I was like, oh, fuck, my eyes are going.
You're like, can you do LASIK when I'm under?
And I told my wife, and you know, I'm getting tennis elbow from reading my phone these days, you know? And I told my wife, I cannot have open heart surgery and get glasses in the same year. I will refuse to be that old.
Same week.
So anyway, side note. Sorry, D. So the show's at 9:30. I show up at 9:30. I walk past the door guy. And I'm like, hey, man, I'm on the show in the back room. He's like, great. Show's running a half hour late. First show's running a half hour late. I was like, ah, shit. That sucks. What are you going to do? So I walk in. I walk through the bar, and I walk to the back. And the guy who booked the show has the manager up against the wall, not physically, but like, you know.
Like he's just so in his personal space.
Yeah, in her face.
Okay.
Going, what? And sweating and like veins out of his neck going, what the fuck is going on with this first show? And she's like, it's running late. I'm sorry. He's like, no, this show ends in 10 minutes. And she's like, I can't do that. He's like, I'll do it. I'll go up there. I'll unplug it. I'll take down their microphones. I'll turn off the whole fucking system.
So he talks like that.
So I just turned around like, I'm going to let this guy handle this. Turned around and walked out.
Like no show's ever run late before.
I know.
Every show runs late, I feel like.
I feel like I tell my wife every time we go to a concert, like, oh, we're running late. I'm like, it's fine. No concert in Los Angeles has ever started on time.
Well, it's funny. At my show, Venice Underground, we did a stand-up New York pop-up show where Candy from Stand Up New York, she hit me up a couple weeks ago like, hey, I'm coming out. I would love to do a pop-up show while I'm there. Can I do it at your venue? I'm like, yeah, as long as you book good comics. She's like, of course. If it's a pop-up, they're only going to be good comics.
Right.
Why wouldn't it be? And so as we're getting closer and closer, she keeps sending me lineups with all the times listed. And, you know, and I'm like, you don't really have to tell every comic in L.A. Like, you know, in New York, you have to be like, you're on it's 9:40 and you might have 10 minutes leeway either way. Because they're jumping and moving here. I'm like, just tell them first half of the show, back half. That's enough because it will swap around.
Right.
And then as we're getting closer to showtime, she's like, yeah, are we going to start this on time? I'm like, this is LA. No show starts on time. Right. If I start on time, the crowd won't be here. But it was like, so I started what I normally do, which is 9:35, even though I tell people 9:30. But it was so great seeing a New Yorker just so like,
yeah.
Well, how is this guy? I'm just like, you just sit down and enjoy your show. I will run everything for you.
Now you see why I never hang out at your show, because it starts at 9:35. And if I'm not out by then, I'm not coming out.
That's why you've canceled every time we booked you on.
So many times I'm like, hey, man, maybe I'll swing down to the Venice Underground. And then around 8 o'clock, I'm like, yeah.
You can sleep there.
All right.
There's a big green room.
That's what I love. When I lived in New York about 6 years ago, and I would get booked there, because I hadn't been to New York in forever, and I'd get like a 12:15 slot. I'm like, fuck, 12:15. But it's New York. It was packed. 12:15 here, dead. But New York, packed.
I feel like the Comedy Store, some of their rooms are packed at 12:15 now.
Comedy Store.
Probably now they are.
Comedy Store, it's unbelievable what's happening there. It's almost like all three rooms, all shows sold out.
Firing.
All week.
All firing.
And just unbelievable. Like, the lineups are great. It's amazing what's happening. And then you walk to the other clubs and you're like, why is this only happening to one that's also has three huge, like, one huge room, one big room, one small room?
Well, I think they finally got smart. You know, they got rid of the old booker, and then they like realized, oh, we have all these great comedians around here. Let's make every room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what the Ice House did with their side
Incredible.
Room, and that's what the Improv did with the Lab. Let's make it. Let's not make it an open mic room. Let's make it another professional room.
I feel like Jamie Flam created that.
Yeah, he did
lab
really,
and just made magic with it.
Yeah. Jamie Flam from the Long Shot podcast. You can hear him on All Things Comedy. Just throwing up a preacher.
Longest running Hollywood Improv booker
was Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Wow.
He's the one who passed me. One time I was just standing in the hall and he's like, Brian, how come you never send in your avails? And I go, because I'm not a regular. And he goes, oh, I'll just put you on the email list. And I was like, oh, so that was the big moment. You know, like when you get passed, you want it to be like coronation, a big, huge event. And he's just like, I'll put you on the email list. And then like 2 weeks later, I just start getting these emails every Wednesday. I'm like, huh, well, can I just do it that way at all the other clubs?
It's hilarious. So this guy is like, got this woman pinned to the wall, basically. Not physically, but just fucking yelling. And so I stepped out, and Kira and I just kind of hung out on the sidewalk. And with the other comics, I'm really going to let them figure it out. So he comes out and he explains everything. And I'm like, that's fine. You care about the show. I get it. You know, you want it to start on time. It's fine. But, you know, we've all been here before. Kira was at a bar gig in Venice the night before when the Dodgers went 14 innings.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And ended up pushing that show 2 hours. It's like
so that was a Tuesday night at the Whaler, so now we're Wednesday at the Improv.
And so I just resigned. I texted my wife. I'm like,
I don't even know the name of the show. So he's complaining, and you're like, yeah.
Yeah, so I text him. I'm like, I resigned. I'm going to be here a while. It's fine. You know, he gave me a bunch of drink tickets. I'm like, cool. I'll just text my wife, say it's going to be a later night than I thought. And then we just hung out, and I caught up with Kira and this guy, Peter Sprite. And then we go in the back, and the other show had ended. It's like 45 minutes later. The other show had ended, and this is the funny part. We're hanging out in the back, and we see the booker hanging out, sitting down, talking to his friends. After the show had cleared out, and he just made a big stink about getting the show started on time. Like, hey, man, shouldn't we get this thing going? I mean, look, you've been one fighting. Like, half the audience left because they didn't want to wait. So there's, like, you know, only a handful of people in there. And then guess what? It was fine.
Yeah.
Everybody who was there had a good time. They're all pro comics. You know, the audience, the 15, 20 people who stayed had a blast. You don't really need, you don't need to stress. It's my thing.
That was my new thing at Edinburgh this year, my seventh year going. It's the first year where when I walked into a room and it was like not three quarters sold, but half or less. Mm-hmm. And that used to really bother me. Like, where is everybody? Where is everybody? And now I'm like, oh, these are the people here now. I'm going to have a good time with them. And once the show's over, I'll figure out how to re-promote tomorrow.
Absolutely.
So it goes better. Yeah, I hate when comics start yelling at the people in the room who are like, where is everybody? And you're like, that's our fault, not theirs. Like, these are the people who showed up. Give them your best.
I've had some of my favorite shows, I should say, in front of 8 or 9 people.
One of my favorite hours in Edinburgh was in front of 2 people. Couple.
Really?
I walked in. There was only a couple. They were really young. It was a midnight show. I was doing a lot of storytelling, and I said, well, we don't have to do this if you guys are uncomfortable. And they're like, if you want to do it, do it. And I was like, okay. So I just sat on the stool, no mic, and just sat there telling, you know, doing the storytelling show. And they were laughing, you know, but you have to keep you're just doing eye contact.
Yeah, yeah,
sure they're paying attention. But every now and then the boy in the couple, he was probably 19, 20 years old, he'd raise his hand. And I'd be like, yes, you don't have to raise your hand. You're allowed to interrupt me in this show. And he goes, well, what happened to this guy? And it was like almost like a workshop where he was fixing my stories because I did, you know, as somebody inside the story, you don't realize you're dropping.
Sure.
You're leaving tangents unfinished. Absolutely. And so that was great. And then afterwards, there was this chaos kind of weird show with music and comedians and story. It was just like a, you know, 1 a.m. just insane show. Whatever shows up, whatever happens, happens. And it was like maybe 5 blocks from where my venue was. And I told him I was going over there and they're like, can we come with you? And you mentioned that one story about the Nazi you saw eating ice cream. Can you tell that story? And I go, yeah, definitely. So they end up following me. They've been becoming like my best fans.
Mm-hmm.
And I told the Nazi story with a blues band playing behind me, which made it
awesome.
More interesting.
So talk to us about how does Edinburgh work?
So Edinburgh is the Fringe Festival is the world's largest arts festival. It's every August in Edinburgh, Scotland, or Edinburgh is how it looks like it's spelled. But say it like that and they just laugh at you.
Sure, of course.
Scotland, which is the capital of Scotland. And it's 25 days long. There's about 3,000 acts in it. Everything from like, you know, like a massive Jim Jefferies doing a 750-seater down to people in a room that holds less than 10. It's like this space that we're in right now. They would probably put 15 to 20 people they try and jam in here.
Right, right.
And
I've tried that.
And
it was a big podcast.
A big, very huge podcast. And it's amazing. It's everything. It's stand-up. It's sketch. It's improv. It's street performers, mimes, kids shows, music, theater, dance. It's absolutely any kind of performance art is available there because that's why it's called the Fringe because there's no panel to determine whether you can get in. Like you have to apply with a promoter, but they don't really judge you based on content. They judge you more on like have you been here before? Do you know how to promote?
Oh, really?
Do you know
okay.
how to get people
oh,
in?
Interesting.
With the whole idea, it all started 71 years ago with there was a big theater festival and all these plays and you know theater troupes who couldn't get in. They said, well, who the hell are these people? Who's this committee, these judges, to judge whether it's art? And so they just found venues around, as in on the fringe of the theater
festival. Oh, interesting.
Festival.
This is a history lesson podcast.
And started putting
Pioneer
on,
Town, Edinburgh. This is great.
And so they started putting on their own shows, and basically they're like, we can get an audience. The audience determines if it's an art, and eventually comedians went, hey, there's no festival for us, so they just started going, well, we can do it in any bar there is. We don't need a theater space.
Yeah, right.
And so it's huge, and it's overwhelming, and it's some comedians hate it. I know Kyle Kinane did not have a good time. He just it was just like he felt very restricted there, whereas I do it kind of on this the free level, which is it's a free show, but you pay when you leave, like a street performer.
Uh huh.
And so I'm in this freedom world where he was kind of working in this corporate sort of world. And that's not who he is. You know,
right,
he's such an amazing – I mean, he's one of my favorites. And he was just like – he felt like he felt restricted.
Sure.
Like, do the same act every night. He's like, that's not what I do.
Right.
But then you get somebody like Ari Shaffir. Ari Shaffir has embraced it. He loves going over there. And it's just – it's great when you see comics who just get it.
Mm-hmm.
He gets that – you know, he can do his hour and then he can jump on. There's all kinds of different shows you can jump on. Some of them are theme shows. I just love it.
Yeah. So, oh, 7 years, right? You've been going?
Yeah, it's my 7th year.
And is it all self-promotion over there?
Yeah, basically, you can go, like if you're in the big corporate run things, is then you get the PR people and you get all that, you know, people
right.
putting your ads everywhere. But the problem is when you go that way is you have to pay all those people back.
Yeah.
And they get their money way before you get your money.
Yeah, yeah.
And, so I go in what's called the free, and so basically there's a couple of small registration fees I have to pay to get in, and then I do my own flyers, and I hire a flyer to flyer for me.
Mm-hmm.
Flyering's sort of like barking in New York,
yeah.
And it's the most effective way to get people into a show, because people are literally going, well, I'm walking from here to here, and I've got a 3-hour gap before these two shows, and they will literally be walking down the street and talk to a flyer, and a flyer is good, if they're a good salesperson, the person goes, oh. Yeah, I'll go in here because it's a free show.
Right.
Meaning if in the first 10 minutes they hate me, they can get the fuck out.
Yeah.
But if they stick to the end, then people actually give decent tips.
Oh, that's cool.
And we make more money in the frees than most of the people in the paid because the paid lose money.
Oh, I bet. And I would go to the frees just because you can go to the corporates anytime you want. You know what I mean? They're corporates. They're around there all the time. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you can go see a fucking big show anytime you want. I'd rather go see a free show and find somebody new that I can be a fan of.
Yeah, that's a big
thing. That's one of my favorite things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seeing somebody I either haven't seen before or that isn't a really big deal.
Right.
It's. I think it's the best is when you see somebody that nobody knows about and you're like, well, how does it know? Like,
yeah.
I it's very rare that I'll tell a booker of a club, you got to go see this or you need to bring this person in. I won't recommend people lightly. You know, usually people I would recommend, they already know who they are. Mm-hmm. But every now and then you're telling them about somebody new and they're like, who's that? And then when they see them and you see their eyes light up, you're like, I did that for you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's magic. Yeah. That's like one of my favorite things.
Let's go to one of your least favorite things.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I'm just assuming. You had to have seen some fucked up shows in your day.
I didn't like the Bringer shows.
Right.
What? I'm still not a fan of that, but I think more from the standpoint of like the promoters that do those, mm-hmm. I think it's like smudging crap on comedy.
Right. Well, tell the listeners what a Bringer show is.
I mean, basically it's where a promoter who also thinks he's a comic, she's a comic, has a bunch of other like wannabe comics that are so green they have no business.
Right.
Yeah.
On an actual booked show. They should just be doing open mics. And they get stage time according to how many people they bring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Or it's like a pay to play, which I'm opposed to in all live art forms.
Oh, absolutely.
Anybody should ever have to pay to play.
Oh, absolutely. I agree.
I find that disgusting.
No, the Bringer show is horrible. It's a yes.
I remember my first Bringer because I remember I was doing open mics and somebody's like, oh, you're good. I want you to come do my show. And, you know, they told me where the show was. That place that used to be LA Comedy Club used to be out in the Valley.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was. They had little drink tokens with pelicans on it. I don't know why I remember that.
Pelicans.
Flamingos.
Flamingos.
That's way before my time.
So they were way out in the Valley and I was like so excited to do it. And they're like, okay, just, you know, you need to make sure that you bring five people. And I was like, what? And they're like, you know, promote the show and get five people in the audience. I'm like, I don't live in the Valley. There's no way I'm getting five people there.
Right.
And, but they let me do it anyway. But I was so excited to be booked. But then looking back, you realize like I wasn't at the point where people should be paying to see me. Or the only Bringer shows that I even think have respect for the audience. It's not even that the fact that they're robbing these kids of their dream or they're abusing their dream. It's that they're not respecting the audience. So the audience is basically paying money to see a show of comics they shouldn't have to pay to see. I only like it when they bring in like two or three full-on pros that are getting paid so that the show just rocks. The show it's a good show when they're on stage, which also helps lift the little guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the Bringers are promoting, they promote, hey, I'm on a show with so-and-so, like, you know, like Theo Von or somebody awesome. It's not like, come see me at the improv. It's like, dude, I'm on the show with this guy. I got to go see this guy. And then you're promoting something good.
But I feel like that's not a Bringer show. I feel like that's just a well-crafted show because if you have like
it's garbage day, comics. Apparently, by the way, and all my windows are open. So sorry to mean to interrupt. So if you hear garbage trucks in the back.
So we can throw this podcast in there.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
With our history lessons.
I got around Bringer shows by just going just completely just fly. I'm like, I'm a headliner. I'll close your show. I was not a headliner.
That's the best.
I'm a headliner. I'll close your show if you want.
You went in with the opposite delusion, which is that delusion all first year people have. They're like, dude, I'm as good as Louis C.K. or I'm as good as Bill Burr. You're like, no, you're really not. But I do remember when I used to think I was.
Totally.
The first year.
All right. What?
Look at your face.
I'm like, oh no, a million times.
Bron, what happened in Nashville? I'm looking over your text.
Oh, the road.
These
to
are
Nashville.
Actually the good road stories.
These are the road stories. So Dee determines she's going to move to Nashville, and she's going to load up her minivan and just drag all her crap to Nashville.
Uh-huh.
And she's telling me this story. She's like, yeah, I'm going to drive out there. And I just looked at my calendar. I'm like, I've got one gig. I'm going to cancel it. I'm going to jump in the car. So we end up road tripping for no reason other than the fact that it was something for me to do other than sit around about how I only had one gig. And we rocked in her car. And you tell the next part. Or you tell, well, who were we listening to? We were listening to a lot of comedy albums.
Oh, yeah, because, of course, we were driving through. This was the day after Thanksgiving that we left for Nashville, by the way, 2016. It's the day after Thanksgiving. It takes us, and I had to get there, I think, is that the landlord was going.
The landlord was a trucker, and he was leaving town. He had a long haul to do or something.
he was a tour bus driver for Kenny Chesney.
Oh.
It's even better.
And so,
out of Nashville?
Yeah.
Oh, I wonder
if I actually moved 45 minutes east of Nashville to Lebanon.
Are you near the prison?
I felt like I was in prison.
I did
no,
too.
No, I'm just kidding. No, it
she
was
told me Nashville.
Beautiful.
Then we get there. I'm like, yeah, the city's like an hour from here.
It was 45 minutes.
It's like people who say they live in Los Angeles, but they live in San Bernardino.
Except for the shit in San Bernardino. There's nothing.
Oh, wow.
There was a horse ranch next door, another horse ranch, some sort of a shooting
and by
range.
Next door, he and means 20 acres of.
Sure, of course. Yeah, yeah.
And then some place that had five dogs that wanted to murder. Like, I was like, oh, I'm going to take a walk down the street, and these dogs would come racing out to the street, and they'd be barking at you. Like, well, apparently I'm not even allowed to leave the property.
Oh, yeah, like a pack of dogs. Yeah.
Jeez.
Those dogs fought wolves on a regular basis, I'm pretty sure.
But we're on the drive out there. And I started asking her who her favorite comedians are because I love talking to all comedians. Who's your favorite?
Absolutely.
And some people I know and some people I don't. She mentions Ryan Stout, who I love.
Well, yes.
And so we pop in an album.
So we listen to his album because, of course, at this point, we're driving through. We're almost to Arizona, and there's no reception out there in the desert.
Right.
So now I'm on my downloaded list on Spotify.
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to be relevant to mention that it was on Spotify. So we're listening to Ryan Stout's album, and he has this incredible bit about getting ready to board a plane, and he's standing near a one-armed man, and so he's very hopeful that he'll get seated next to the one-armed man.
Right, yeah.
Which he does, but on the wrong side.
Right, right, right.
So anyway, throughout this bit, which I'm not going to butcher, he refers to this one-armed man as Uno. Mm-hmm. And we're already dying listening to the bit because he really is. That really is like a perfect album, I think.
Yeah, he's so great.
He's absolutely brilliant. Right. And so one of my favorite things to listen to over and over again. But we're dying because I don't think he'd heard it.
I'd never heard the bit because it's on an old album, so he's ditched the material, which is why I have no problem like telling the last part of the bit, which is he goes to the crowd after he keeps calling this guy Uno over and over, and it's just so funny he's calling this one-armed guy Uno. And he goes, oh, by the way, I have a game for you all to play. And so I hope the listeners of your podcast start playing it and send it to Ryan. But it's whenever you're out and about, if there's a one-armed guy, whoever says Uno first wins.
So flash forward to this hellaciously long drive, which, by the way, we're packed in my minivan, and my dog and my cat are rogue in the minivan.
Yeah. Okay.
They're not in crate.
Sure.
The cat's taken a liking to Bronston, and he's a 27-pound orange cat.
Right.
Yeah. Not small.
He's probably got excited about your beard. 27 pounds.
The beard was much smaller, but now, the cat would love it. But we pull into what is it? Williams,
Arizona, where we have to stop because at this point it's snowing, and my van is packed to the point where we can't switch off driving.
Right.
Because he wouldn't be able to move my seat back.
Right. Okay. For those of you who don't know, Bron's a tall drink of water.
Yeah, I'm 6'7".
6'7".
I'm 5'7". Full foot taller than I am. At this point, and I don't know how to drive through snow. I've never driven through snow. And we decide to stop because I think I'm horrifying him driving through snow.
Yeah, right. It wasn't fun. We're like, hey, look, why don't we stop? And so we'd gone on hotels.com and gotten a Motel 6.
Mm-hmm.
And we pull into the town, and the roads are complete ice now. They're like the town itself, like the snow is packed and it's formed into ice. The sidewalks are ice. And we pull into the Motel 6 that we finally found after driving through this whole, I mean, it's not a big town, but it is, it's scary. Well,
it's like a mile and a half radius town, but there are two Motel 6s in this town.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. So she goes inside the lobby, and I'm just waiting in the car, and she comes out and she screams something at me, but I can't see what she screamed. And then she comes over to the car and goes, we're at the wrong Motel 6. We have to go to the other one, which is less than 200 yards up the road.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we get to that one. And she goes in there and goes, yeah, we're trying to check in. And he's like, well, you know, it's hotels.com. We did it online. And he's like, I don't see it here. Who was working behind the other counter? And she's like, oh, it's this guy, middle-aged, blonde man, white guy, just describing him, right? And meanwhile, I know nothing. And he goes, oh, that guy, Bill, he's an idiot. Go back. Just go back over there. Your reservation is at that other one. It's not at this one. And so we go back in there, and I walk in with her to the lobby to see if I can straighten this out. And it turns out what she had yelled outside the car that I couldn't hear was
Uno.
So one arm Bill is checking us in, and I go, wait, when you were describing this guy to the other the other hotel manager, he's like, who was at the reception desk? Huh, it was a man. That narrows it down to three people. White guy. Yeah, we're in Arizona by the Grand Canyon. White dude. Middle aged, blonde. I'm like, why did you say there's a one arm dude? The fugitive is behind the counter.
Can you describe the guy behind the counter? Have you listened to Ryan Stout's first album?
One word, two syllables.
I love
syllables.
That we're plugging a 10-year-old album.
Good. All of a sudden, he's going to get these new bumps. Like, why are people buying this album?
Oh, that's hilarious.
But he ended up being one of the coolest dudes ever. Because so then we throw the stuff in the room, and I'm like, yo, where can I get alcohol? And he's like, oh, yeah, man. Yeah, look. Grocery store right across the street, they're closed, but just go down to Circle K, which is like a 7-Eleven kind of thing. And as I'm walking there, the sidewalks are so slippery that I finally get there and I get like just booze because I'm like, I won't need this for the rest of the trip. I'm buying as much shit as I can. I'm trying to walk back and I see a police car pull up and literally, you ever see a cop? And even though you're not drunk, you're not doing anything wrong, but you're immediately like, oh, yeah. I better straighten up. I tried to do that and slipped on the sidewalk and fell on my ass. So the cop just looked at me and they were like, drove off. So they didn't even help.
Right.
And then we get back, but we're hanging out and Bill just starts shooting the shit with us. One arm Bill. From Williams, Arizona. And he said, if you're ever looking for him, that's what you asked for. Because he explained to us.
Well, now I know.
He explained to us that he used to work at the grocery store right across the street. But he got fired after his second infraction. I think one of them, he claimed something about pulling out his penis in the manager's office.
Well, that I vaguely remember. I was pretty buzzed at that point, too.
But the other one is he said some kid was shoplifting, and so he chased him out of the parking lot and was strangling him. And I'm like, how do you not break the stranglehold of a one-armed guy?
That kind of did us in.
And then he says everybody in town knows him because he's lived there his whole life and he's worked virtually every single place. And he was also telling us how he gets in fights all the time. I'm like, you get in fights? And he goes, yeah, this other night. Like, because he there had a black eye. He had some reason, though, where I was like, what happened to your eye? And he's like, ah, oh, I was fighting these two guys at such and such bar. He tells us the bar, and I go, what kind of an asshole is this dude to the point where two guys are like, no, fuck the one arm.
Right.
Like, you hold that one arm behind his back.
I desperately want to know how he lost that arm.
He didn't tell you after all that stuff? He didn't tell you how he lost it?
No.
Come on, that's the thing. You can't ask stuff like that. You always have to ask their friend.
Well, I couldn't even bring myself to describe him as one armed.
I figured he would have volunteered the information. He seemed like an open guy. He was talking about pulling his penis out in his boss's office. You might think, is there anything else you want to tell us, one arm?
This guy's one of the funniest. And then, we end up going like, yeah, we're going to smoke a joint in the room. He's like, oh, well. There might be some maintenance problem I should check out in the room. Because he had to make it so that we went to the room, we called the front desk, and then he could come through so the cameras wouldn't spot him coming in with us.
Oh, like, right. Him in. Smart.
He just gets fired from Motel 6 because of this podcast.
I don't know that he's still there.
No, there's no way he has that job still. If he's still alive, I'd be shocked.
No, but I recently talked to somebody that went to Williams, Arizona, and knew one-armed Bill.
I want to go back there.
I think we should go for Christmas.
All right.
All right, so you run a bar show.
Yeah.
You must have seen something gnarly as must have happened in there.
We've had some... amazing, like I kind of always say there's top 10 moments I've seen.
And I don't want to shit on your show because it's
a good show. Well, the thing is, I mean, just because other comics say it, I'll say it. It's one of the best bar like shows outside of a comedy club in the country at this point. You know, we're getting people in from New York, London, US, and it's 150 people every single Wednesday. It's the biggest weekly show outside of the comedy clubs in the city. So it is amazing.
Yeah.
But it is Venice. And earlier in the now what happens is the crowd sort of self-polices.
Uh-huh.
Like if people get too chatty, they're like, shh, and they kind of do that for us.
That's cool.
But in the beginning, it was Venice, and it was crazy. And when it goes chaos, it goes Venice chaos.
Right.
One of the funniest comedian things I've ever seen happen. I was just reminded because Byron Bauer was on my show the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Is we had this show a couple years ago where CAA said, "Hey, we want to run a showcase to let Dan Soder do his hour, and we're gonna get all these industry people to see him." And so it was like full CAA lineup, and I mean all just beast of comics.
Right.
But as I'm opening the show, and there was room holds 150. And we were probably at like 120 because we actually started early, which messed up people's schedules. But of those people, 60 of them were industry.
Uh-huh. You know?
And so a lot of assistants, but a lot of like huge people. So that's why I was like, yeah, you can do it. Cause I'm like, yeah, Netflix is going to see me, CBS, NBC, everybody's going to see me, right? Turns out they were seeing their cell phones all during my open.
Oh, what a shocker.
Yeah. And I realized that because in the beginning, I'm like, why are none of these jokes working? And then I realized only the people laughing who were right in front of me. And along all the booths and all the tables and all the nice stuff, the VIP,
mm-hmm.
it was just a sea of phones. Just everybody's lit up, like, like looking at avatars. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so then I just focused on the crowd and I kind of warned the next comics. The lineup was great. Joe List was on it. And I'm like, hey, just focus on the people in the front, because until Dan gets up, they're just not here for us.
Right. Know?
And even though we want them to be. So I tell this to Byron. Byron's the last person to go on before Soder. And I go, yeah, so just don't worry. They won't pay attention to you. He goes, okay. And, you know, Byron is just so slow and just deliberate in the way he acts. You know, I love him. And he goes out, and the first thing he does is he picks up the microphone stand with the mic in the mic stand. And he goes, hey, Townhouse, how you doing? And then he just takes the mic stand and slowly sweeps across the tables in the front and knocks all of their drinks onto the ground. And he goes, now that the rest of you are paying attention, I could do some comedy.
Oh, man.
And I was like, I have never seen anybody just be so like, fuck you people, you're going to pay attention.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love it.
Byron's so great. He did my show Wednesday. Crushed it. One of the best sets I've seen in a long time.
Oh, that's fantastic.
One of the worst things I've ever seen there. This is a...
Hold that thought. By the way, the industry, they were doing something at the Improv for all assistants. It was either all assistants at Levity or just all comedy assistants on like Tuesday night. And it's painful. It is. They don't want to be there. They wanted to be home two hours ago, but they couldn't go home. So they go to the lab and look at their phones while comics go on stage. Like, why are we doing this?
It's a mandatory office party.
It is a mandatory office party.
Desiree and I still enjoy going to shows, mm-hmm. and we'll turn our phones off.
Oh, well, sure.
Watch shows.
Absolutely.
But it's horrible when you're out with others that are industry and they feel entitled to be on their phones during a show. I think that's the worst thing. We should be setting the example.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is it's usually the comics. Like the comic table is always just fully lit up because we're all just like,
yeah, but that's comics. Like, I mean,
until somebody dies and they're like, oh, let's put the phone down. Let's watch him eat it.
Oh, this girl, he's awful. Oh. Yeah.
I mean, I'll have my phone out to do social media.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But it's clearly like I'm doing social
Absolutely.
Media.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. What was one of the worst things you saw?
This is one of the weirdest things. Six, seven months into doing the show. So the show didn't have the 150 people established it was now. It's a relatively light night. And early in the run of the shows. So it was always like, I was always afraid that they'd pull it because we didn't have enough people or something. You know what I mean? Like, is this show going to sustain? And we had Owen Smith there. Mm-hmm. So funny. I was so excited to get him. And I don't know if you don't know him, really, really tall guy. Works in commercials all the time. His comedy's so smart. It's just so
incredible, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, his writing is amazing. And his delivery is just so just. He just hands it out there for you. It doesn't feel like he's performing. It's beautiful. And so he's on stage. There's very few people in the crowd, like maybe 40. And there's this old guy kind of sitting by himself, sort of off to stage left, kind of right where I light if you're ever in there. And, you know, like maybe 10 feet from the stage. And he was with this younger kind of guy, about 30. They were both kind of big dudes. They were dressed really funny, like weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of them had a fez on. And so at some point, this guy just starts laying in to Owen for no reason, you know, like out of nowhere. And his buddy had gone somewhere else. And he's like, what? And the guy said something else. He goes, shut up, you old gypsy. Because he's dressed like a gypsy.
Right.
The guy goes, don't call me that. That's a racial slur. And Owen's like, what? And he goes, don't call me that. You calling me that's a horror. He goes, gypsy is a bad word, which apparently it is to right. the people who are travelers. I did not know this.
Sure.
Until now. So now I'm just screaming gypsy.
We're all willing to learn.
Yeah. Here we were like, oh, he's a gypsy eyes. He's beautiful. And he's like, shut up, you old gypsy. And then the guy's like, you calling me gypsy is like me calling you the N word. And he pronounces it full ER, sure. right?
Right, right.
And the room goes whoosh, silent. And I'm standing kind of over by the bar. And I'm like, did that really just happen? And Owen is looking at the guy for a second. And in my brain, this is what's happening. Like, this is Venice. We could pop off into a riot at sure. any fucking moment.
Right, right.
Like, this is Venice. Super liberal. This old guy might just get his ass beat. This is a show where if the comedian on stage right now had every right, if he felt like it, to just drop the mic and go, fucking Venice is filled with racist people. Or to drop the mic and go and beat the shit out of this guy. Right. All this stuff's going through my head where, well, I guess this was the last show. But what happens instead is Owen Smith looks at him and goes, no, those two things are not the same. And he goes through this whole long thing about, look, you could change your clothes. Nobody knows that that's what you are. There's nothing I can do. My mom named me this, so when my resumes went in, they wouldn't know until I walked in the door that I was a black man. And he kind of went on to this beautiful, long, like, and I'm sure it's pulled from all of his different sure. bits. It was funny, but it built to being really, really funny by the end. And you just watched a master craft this incredible thing out of such ugliness, such beauty. And he goes, besides, at the end of the day, I don't give a shit what you say, you old fucking gypsy. And then it went right back into his comedy and never referenced, because usually if somebody comes at me that hard, like nobody's even come at me that hard, is every now and then I'll knock them down even though they're not here anymore.
Right.
Like, just to be like, I know you're there. It was like that guy just went away once he cleared the air. It's like Owen, and I fell in love with that guy that night, Owen Smith. I'm like, he's awesome. He's unbelievable. And then I actually think the more I find out about Travelers and you watch the shows, whatever that show was with William H. Macy and whatever, is I kind of feel like the old guy was trying to start a fight, a big riot or something, so the other guy who was sort of lurking by the bar could jump over and clear the registers. Like, I figured.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think if they were actual Travelers or Gypsies, is that would have been the, you know, that seems like a TV way to do it. Cause a big, giant disturbance, which actually – you've seen that, you know, somebody will pretend to have like a seizure and they go clear out the registers while everybody's dealing with the woman.
So basically what you're saying is all gypsies are thieves. Just lose all my
wow. Lose all. But some of them are very nice people, I'm sure.
My mom's best friend is a gypsy. I can say that. All right.
Yeah.
First of all, I apologize for coughing through this whole thing. I am feeling 10 times better than I felt yesterday. I spent all day in bed. So I apologize to you guys, Bron and Dee, and I apologize for my listeners for coughing all day. But I want to thank you guys for coming over on a beautiful Friday afternoon. It's been really good weather here lately. I like it.
Thank you for having me.
Beautiful glassy waves out there all day.
I can't believe I told that story, not the fact that a guy got shot right across the street from a venue during our show a couple weeks ago. Well, whatever.
Tell us more about the history of Edinburgh then next time. We can.
Can you cut this? Oh, you asked me about it. I just started.
Well, it was settled in.
Rook, you gotta close that out. History.
You gotta close it. You gotta go out on
pants.
That one. What happened? This is Venice. By the way, Venice, as, I don't know. As nice, quote, as it's become, it's still Venice. It's still, that's the only place where I paddle out and I surf there all the time, knowing there's a good chance I'm going to get into a fight. Like, that's just like Venice. That's just, Venice will always be that way, no matter how many $2-3 million homes and you gang on the next street.
That riles the locals up even more because they're all getting priced out.
It's
the most expensive place to rent or to purchase per square foot in all of Los Angeles County.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, because Beverly Hills, it's more expensive, but they're bigger.
Right.
But per square foot, Venice, on average, is the most expensive place to live in LA because of the Snapchat and the Google people and the tech people.
Yeah.
You know, they drove all the rents up, purchased places for too much.
I have no sympathy. That's been happening in Northern California for years.
Oh, well, Northern California is ridiculous. I've said this 1,000 times. You can't. The opener opens for me up in San Francisco, lives 2 hours away from San Francisco. You can't be a starving artist in San Francisco anymore. It's impossible.
No, in fact, my family lives inland in Gastein, and they're lucky that they purchased homes when they did, because they wouldn't be able to afford to purchase them now.
Right.
Even there, and that's like farmland. There's only 3,000 people in town.
Right. You're going to tell us this guy gets shot story?
Yeah, I was trying to. So this, actually, it's funny that we talk about how gentrified and how expensive it is, because right. somebody about 6-7 months ago, they said, how the hell – how are we going to get rents to go down? Like, just Venice needs to be Venice. A couple people need to get shot, and the rich people move out.
Right.
Cut to maybe 3 weeks later, we're having my show. I'm looking for one of the comics, and somebody goes, oh, he's upstairs smoking. So I go upstairs, go outside, and I'm like, yeah, you're probably about 20 minutes. You know, somebody next, then you. And we're standing there for a minute, and then I go inside. It was Keith Carey was out there. And I go upstairs about 20 minutes later to go find somebody. Smoke. All right, Mom, don't listen to this. And so the bouncer's like, you can't go outside. And I go, what? And they're like, we can't let anybody in or out. And I go, what are you talking about? And they're like, we can't let anybody in or out. And I'm like, yeah, fuck you. I'm going out, just because, you know, I work with them sure. all the time. And they're like, okay, you can, because you're an employee. And I look around, there's just police cars fucking everywhere. I'm like, what happened? And they're like, oh, we don't want anybody out here because somebody was just shot. Mm-hmm. So they don't want anybody coming in case that guy's coming in to hide or sure. shoot up people. And they don't want anybody going out, so they don't get in everybody's fucking way. And so it ended up happening during our show. And then 8 days later, so not the day after our show, the following week, someone else was shot within 20 feet of that same place. And then this summer, somebody was knifed right there.
Oh, geez.
But the rents, they're going down.
I've been over there a couple of times. I go to La Cabana because it's open till like 4 in the morning. Yeah, yeah. So if like, I'm driving back from Irvine or something, I can go grab something to eat. And there's been several times where I could not get to La Cabana because it's been policed off more than once.
I lived on Speedway and Horizon. And when I'd get home from the improv, mm-hmm. well, we know those mornings were 5 a.m.
Yeah.
anyway, but I'd have to park like a mile and a half from the house. There was no parking there.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
We didn't have parking.
Yeah.
And that was when you were there, it was even sketchier.
Oh, I know.
All right. Well, guys, listen, I got to say this one thing. So, and I said this last week and I'll say it again. So I made some stupid joke about my kid had to sell raffle tickets for his school to raise money so they could have supplies. And so I did some stupid tweet like, can't believe I got to fucking walk my kid around while the fucking government just approved $80 billion more dollars in June. And by the way, whoever's listening here who said, I know how where the fucking money comes from the state for the fucking schools. Just because it works that way doesn't mean it works. All right. So that's what my joke was. It wasn't fucking the federal budget doesn't have anything to do with the school and the military. Fuck you. Fuck you.
Is this why you don't do political on your show? Because then you find yourself doing apologies later?
No, it's not an apology. It's not an apology. It's an I know how shit
that's
works.
The opposite of an apology.
I know how shit works. And just because it works that way doesn't mean it's right thing to do. Sit back and be a passive motherfucker. But that's not why I'm bringing this up. The cool people who heard this fucking DM'd me and messaged me and Venmo'd me a bunch of money for my kid's school.
Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so I want to thank everybody out there who did that. I don't have the list of names, but I know Stu did and Dave and Amber. I apologize. I'll get the list for the next one. So that was awesome. So I just want to thank you guys for that. And now I got to go spend all day filling out like 1,000 raffle tickets with people's names on it. So that's what I'm going to do all Friday.
Just tell them they lost. You guys all lost. Thanks for the money. You all lost the raffle.
So thank you. That was super cool, you guys. That was literally the last intention of my joke. That really was. So thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate that. And when you're in Southern California, go to the Rec Room. Check out the shows down there. D, right?
Huntington
Tuesday
Beach,
through Sunday?
Yeah.
In Huntington Beach?
Yep.
Tuesday through Sunday, and when come see the Venice Underground.
Every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday night, or catch Braun on the road. I want to thank you guys for coming over today, and I want to thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next week.
You want to know about life on the road? It's
booze, tacos, angry dwarves, strippers waving guns,
and
bees, fights, candle flights, running with the runs,
and
blacklists, bounce checks, great at bachelorette. Drunks in the front, making out through your set.
And
middle acts doing blow more, missing merch.
And
drive the rental car past another mega church.
And
juice, keys, vagina, fist, your cell phone is gone. One big Law and Order marathon.